Hello, and welcome to another edition of the Marlena Program. This is the program for the week of January 14th, holy moly, 2008. We have a great show lined up for you tonight. I'm very, very excited about this show. I've been wanting to bring this particular guest on for over a year and a half, and finally got it to happen. So come on in, won't you? Kind of get yourself nice and comfortable and get your telephone beside you. Put your feet up, get your beverage of choice, and join us for a while right here at the Mainstream. I'm Marlena. Well, hello everyone. It's a pretty nice Sunday in Seattle. And, oh yes, my Seahawks lost yesterday. But, I can't ever root for Dallas, so I'll alienate all you Dallas Cowboys fans. So I'm glad New York won, but I can't ever root for New York, so next week we'll be, after alienating all you New York fans, rooting again for the Green Bay Packers after having alienated all of those fans last week when I rooted for the Seahawks. Phew! Can you keep up with all of that? Let me just go through the housekeeping details that we need to do, and then we're going to get straight to the program. If you are listening to this program at any time between the hours of 5 to 7 Pacific, Pacific, 8 to 10 Eastern on a Sunday night in North America, or 1 to 3 UTC on a very early Monday morning, then you're listening live. If you're listening at any other time, you're listening either to a podcast or a replay. In any case, put your feet up, relax, and enjoy, and I think you'll agree we've got a great show tonight. My guest tonight is Jim Gibbons, the president and CEO of National Industries for the Blind. NIB and its associated agencies around the country employ more than 5,600 people who are blind in the manufacture and delivery of products and services to the federal government. Prior to joining NIB, Jim was president and chief executive officer of AT&T's campus-wide access solutions. Jim received his undergraduate degree in industrial engineering from Purdue University and would go on to become the first blind person to graduate with a Harvard MBA from the Harvard Graduate School of Business Administration. He is a member emeritus of the Harvard Business School Alumni Association Board of Directors in 2006, as if that wasn't all enough. Jim was elected the president of the North American Caribbean region of the World Blind Union. And in 2007, Purdue recognized Jim as an outstanding engineer of the year. I am very pleased, I'm very honored, I am very delighted to bring to ACB Radio a friend of ACB and someone whom I have long wanted to get to know and feel that I'm doing that, Jim Gibbons. Hey, Jim, welcome to Marlena.
Hi, Marlena. It's great to be here this evening.
Thank you so much. I'm delighted that we could work this out, and I appreciate your time on a Sunday night.
Not a problem. It's really my pleasure.
Well, this is quite a resume. I mean, but let's go back a little bit. And before we get into the full topic at hand, tell us a little bit about you, kind of as you were growing up. Where did you grow up, and have you been blind all your life?
Well, Marlena, I grew up in Indianapolis, Indiana, the south side of Indianapolis. I'm the youngest of 8 children, and I have an older sister who's 10 years older than me, who's blind as well. And we both started losing our vision around third grade, and I was totally blind by the time I was a sophomore, that sophomore junior year at Purdue University. So, born and bred Hoosier, went to Purdue, studied industrial engineering, and then I started my career with AT&T before going off to business school.
Now, for people who may not know, Jim, what give us a thumbnail description of industrial engineering. What is that?
Well, when joining, when my first day at Purdue University, we were in the big major lecture hall, and the head of the engineering program said, look to your left and look to your right, because really only one of you are going to be here in 4 years, because they had a pretty significant dropout rate.
Wow.
And I chose industrial engineering because it was really the integration of kind of people and systems to improve generally manufacturing environments, but really any kind of operational environment. I thought that sounded pretty exciting, and I thought it would lead to an exciting career path. So.
Did you have kind of in the back of your mind that someday maybe you might apply this to working within the blindness arena?
You know, I didn't, not at that stage of my career, and I really didn't even while going to graduate school or when I was the early days of being the president of the wholly owned subsidiary of AT&T. When I got the search, when the search firm called me to talk to me about National Industries for the Blind, I knew very little about it. And I'd always thought that I would, as I grew in my career, would get involved with some boards of directors and have an influence on the lives of people who were blind. I thought I would have more influence by being successful in the, quote, sighted world. But when I learned about National Industries for the Blind, the business model that it utilized, the scope and scale and mission of the organization, I really, major part of my decision to move into the whole social enterprise sector was really to shift from a person who might have an influence on the lives of people who are blind to really that of a direct impact, to that of a direct impact player. And, it's been a pretty exciting, 9.5 years at National Industries for the Blind for me.
What is the mission of the National Industries for the Blind?
Our mission at National Industries for the Blind is to enhance the economic and the personal independence of people who are blind, primarily through creating, sustaining, and improving employment. And we do that through a network of more than 85 associated agencies around the country with operations in more than 200 locations around the country.
Now, I have been seeing a great deal of late about some searching that NIB is doing for a fellowship program. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Sure. Well, National Industries for the Blind has been creating employment for nearly 70 years for people who are blind through this network of associated agencies. And when I joined NIB several years ago, coming out of corporate America, I was familiar with and had a lot of exposure to programs where talented, high-potential folks would come into the company and would work a variety of assignments and really build a portfolio of skills that would really build a foundation for those young managers to grow rapidly and grow successfully within the corporation. Because we're National Industries for the Blind and 85 independent associated agencies, it was a little bit more challenging to pull off a cohesive program. But in working with our network of associated agencies, the National Association for the Employment of People Who Are Blind, which is an association of our agencies, our board of directors, we developed about 5 years ago a very comprehensive business leaders program, which is comprised of a fellowship, which is what I just described, rotational assignments for folks that come in for 2 years, and they do 8-month rotations at NIB or at one of our associated agencies, or at two of our associated agencies, for that matter. And they leave after that 2 years on a paid fellowship. They leave with a portfolio of skills in the areas of marketing, finance, accounting, operations, strategic planning, human resources management, and leadership and ethics training. And so after that fellowship is completed, the fellowship participants are then recruited within our network of associated agencies and roll into management opportunities throughout the country. The program also has I'd call it a mini MBA type program. We do it in partnership with the University of Virginia's Darden School of Business, which utilizes a case study methodology. And it's an 18-month program, 5 weeks over the course of 18 months, of very intensive business management training that folks throughout our network of associated agencies apply for. It's very competitive. Both the fellowship and the business management training programs are very competitive, and most people who apply don't get into either one. And our business management training program has been very successful. Not only has it created a fabulous learning experience for the participants, but has really stimulated a lot of upward mobility and promotions for the more than 50 folks that have completed the program thus far. And then we have a leadership at all levels program, which is really where we've trained 6 certified instructors or facilitators who all happen to be blind, to travel across the country and train our workforce across the country on a variety of business and leadership principles so that we're ensuring that our workforce is ready for the 21st century. And then we have a partnership with the Hadley School for the Blind for a distance learning program to make sure that our workforce has more opportunity and exposure to skills development to, again, be more competitive and more viable and ensure their own job security in this 21st century. So that's a thumbnail sketch of the overall program.
If someone is interested, though, in the first step in the fellowship program, must they be an employee already of an associated agency?
Nope, they do not have to be at all. In fact, most of our participants have not been employees, but several have been. They simply need to apply for the program. As I mentioned, it's a pretty competitive program and a competitive process. We're accepting applications right now through February 15th, and they can contact us through our website, which is nib.org, or they can call us at 703-310-0500 and ask for somebody on the Business Leaders Program team and get the information that they would need to apply for the program.
All right, my guest tonight, Jim Gibbons. He's with the National Industries of the Blind, for the Blind, sorry. I get that oven four thing going, you know what I mean, Jim?
I do.
And we'll be right back. We've opened the lines. The telephone number to call is 866-666-7926. We'll be right back. Humanware, advocates for Braille literacy and manufacturers of the Braille Note M-Power. For more information on the Braille Note and other fine Humanware products, visit them on the web at www.humanware.com or call Humanware at 1-800-722-3393. Oh, my apologies to Humanware there. I forgot to turn the pot up to get the full promo, but this program is brought to you by Humanware. I like to call Humanware the Braille people. Again, my guest tonight, Jim Gibbons, and the telephone number to call is 866-666-7926. Now, Jim, let's kind of step back a little bit, because you're referring to associated agencies. And there may be people who are sitting out there saying, what the heck is an associated agency?
Sure. Well, let me explain how we're organized. But National Industries for the Blind is a central, not-for-profit, national organization that represents 85 associated agencies from around the country, as we do a variety of program management, marketing, and business development functions for those agencies as their business relates to the federal marketplace. Those associated agencies would be Associations for the Blind throughout the country, Lighthouses for the Blind, such as any of the Texas Lighthouses. In Pennsylvania we have 6 or 8 associated agencies throughout North Carolina and all around the country. The Seattle Lighthouse for the Blind that you're very familiar
Yay.
With is a role model associated agency within our network, who just recently named their new president.
Yes.
Who is a graduate of our business management training program.
Yes, yes.
Kirk Adams is just right now in the process of taking the reins of the Seattle Lighthouse, and I believe Kirk is the first blind gentleman to lead that fine institution.
Yes, that's quite true, and in fact, Kirk and I keep trying to find a date that I can bring him on to the show and kind of talk about how that all happened and where he started, much like with you. One of the things that I try to do with this program is really kind of bring just forward-moving people who, oh, by the way, we happen to be blind and this is what we're doing, onto the show. So next time you see Kirk, give him a nudge.
I will certainly talk to him about that. Well, Kirk is one of our graduates of our business management training program. And is right now, really today, taking the helm there at the Seattle Lighthouse. We have another gentleman who just graduated this past October, and who was named as the executive director of the Mississippi Industries for the Blind, who is a person who is blind. And out of our first class of graduates from 2 years ago, nearly 75% of all of those folks have received significant promotions, and our class that graduated just this past October, 50-plus percent of those participants have received promotions. So we're very excited about this. Our commitment to upward mobility and growth for individuals as well as the program is pretty strong, and we have, as I said, 85 associated agencies plus NIB, that have a wide array of opportunities at all levels of organizations that we really, really are excited to grow the number of team members who are blind in the management ranks, as well as grow employment and scale the employment for the workforce across America.
Well, that's...
Go ahead.
I was just going to say that's wonderful, and we have a call. If you're through with your thought, I'll bring them on in.
Sure.
All right. Hi there. You're with Jim and Marlena. Who's this?
Oh, this is Roger.
Hello, Roger.
First thing I want to say, as the official curmudgeon of whatever I am of my community, that there are some people who don't give a rat's behind which football team won anything.
Oh, yeah, right. Well, too bad.
Anyway, I wanted to say from a person who's been around for a long time in this business, in the blindness world and so forth, that one of the things that, you know, that might make some people understand this, and I mean this all very, very positively, the associated agencies that Jim is talking about are things that we once would have called sheltered workshops. And they have become much more than that now. And I think it's really interesting that, you know, for us, those of us coming up through the business of sort of being anti-sheltered workshop, that nowadays, NIB, which represents these agencies that were once and maybe to some extent still are sheltered workshops, is doing more than a whole lot of other people toward training and getting blind people into leadership positions in business. And I and raising the bar and not doing the low expectation syndrome and getting blind people, you know, positions as CEOs of agencies and stuff. I think that's pretty neat, and I commend him for it. I'd like to say that I believe that at some point in the past, in the beginning of all these programs, there was a president of ACB by the name of Grant Mack that had something to do with some of these ideas.
Grant Mack was actually a member of the NIB Board of Directors. He was a former president of ACB, and I believe a former chairman of the board of NIB back before I was born. Not quite back before I was born, but before I had any exposure.
We like to pat ourselves on the back occasionally.
Yeah. But before I had any exposure to NIB, but yeah. I'm very familiar with Mr. Mack and a lot of his accomplishments. But you're right. We are not your grandfather's NIB. We are an organization that has high expectations for team members and believe in the capabilities of people who are blind. And I think with that fundamental belief, it's allowing us and our network of associated agencies to think more broadly, think more creatively, not only in terms of what team members can do and contribute, but also in terms of the long-term future and how people who are blind will start filling the management ranks of our network of associated agencies in ways we've never even dreamed of. And I think that our history, which is rooted in the sheltered workshop movement, is one that I'm certainly not ashamed of. I think it was really the coming together of the blind, and it really did start with a fundamental belief in the capabilities of people who are blind. It evolved over time, and I think over these past last couple of decades, we've been able to kind of overcome the sheltered part of sheltered and really create an environment that is not only one that provides competitive products and services at a fair market price to our federal customers, but when we survey our workforce across the country and we use a firm that surveys millions of people in commercial America across the country, our survey results proved to be more favorable than that of corporate America. In the 13 categories that we measure, in 10 of those categories, we significantly beat the rest of the country. And in the other three categories, we're very equal to the rest of the country. There's plenty to work on to improve, but I think it's a positive sign.
Well, you know, I think historically, it's of interest to me that ACB in primarily, but not entirely, the person of Grant Mack had some influence on the development of this whole movement from the traditional sheltered workshop to the very forward-looking thing that's going on now. While another organization of the blind just said we're against sheltered workshops, down with them, and so on and so on. And that's I think an illustration of how the two national consumer organizations work. And with that, I'll hang up.
Okay, right. you just leave us with that, Roger. All right, Roger, thanks for calling. 866-666-7926. I'm Marlena. My guest tonight is Jim Gibbons, President and CEO of National Industries for the Blind. But, Jim, there must have been, and I guess I'm making a supposition here, but, you know, I remember when you came to NIB and it was like, whoa, this guy's like either, you know, the second coming from Jesus, because I heard you speak and you would say things like blind people are people with dignity and blind people, you know, and we need to be forward looking and, you know, that was great to hear from NIB. But did you have a hard time initially kind of selling all of this to some of your associated agencies?
I don't think I had a difficult time. I think that in many ways, I think the Business Leaders Program have served as a catalyst to tell the story that maybe our network of associated agencies never could tell as comprehensively before, but maybe was going on and nobody got it. When I got to NIB, I really did sense a belief in the capabilities of people who are blind through the network of leaders throughout NIB. But it's a disparate community. People are all over the country, and we never had a platform to tell the story, and the Business Leaders Program has certainly served as a vehicle to kind of take all the good work that was going on, create a platform to make it better, but as importantly, to tell the story. I do think that our network of associated agencies, the leadership throughout the nation, responded pretty positively to me. But I can say that, you know, like any organization like this, I had my challenges coming in, and you know, I just kept my nose to the grindstone and kept pushing forward with what I thought was the right things to do. And like anybody in a leadership position, I had to learn how to listen to our field, how to lead, how to serve, and how to listen effectively, because there's a lot of great ideas that come from the field. My job is to sift through all those great ideas and make sure that we're moving the right ball forward across the nation.
And I think that's great advice in anything that we do. Lead, learn, and listen. And, you know, you can't learn if you don't listen. And if you want to lead, you definitely need to do both of those things. I think that should be my motto, actually. Shut up and listen. 866-666-7926. We're coming up on our half-hour break. And when we come back, we can still take your calls about NIB or the programs. But, Jim, I want to talk a little bit about the World Blind Union and the role that you play with them. We'll be right back right here on Marlena at the Mainstream of ACB Radio.
You're listening to ACB Radio Mainstream. Call Marlena now at 1-866-666-7926. That's toll-free, 1-866-666-7926.
This week's Marlena program is brought to you by HumanWare. Visit them on the web at www.humanware.com or call them at 1-800-722-3393. HumanWare, empowering people through Braille literacy. Hi, this is Marlena. Have you been listening to ACB Radio for a while and wonder how you can help? Well, there's a Donate to ACB Radio link now available from the main page at www.acbradio.org. And thank you so much for listening to ACB Radio, where your listening is our business. You're listening to Marlena at the Mainstream of acbradio.org and WTNDLP Macomb 106.3 FM. Phew, with all those announcements and IDs, cookie cutter radio ain't got nothing on this show. All right, let's bring Jim back in. It is just about half past the hour. In our second hour, we will be in open forum, so get those topics on your mind about which you might like to speak. 866-666-7926. Well, talk to us, Jim, about, first of all, the World Blind Union, and then the North American Caribbean region. What is that? What's that all about?
Well, the World Blind Union is a global organization of national organizations of and for the blind. I think it's about a 50-50 split across the world. And its really purpose is to really bring the blindness community together in a way that has a global impact, with a particular focus on issues in transferring knowledge between the developed countries and the developing countries. The World Blind Union does a lot of work in many countries where it becomes a central force in uniting a variety of organizations and even countries on building a platform on how to serve the blind community. In the United States, the North American and Caribbean region, all of the organizations have grown up pretty pretty independently, and the central World Blind Union brand, so to speak, is not as prevalent here in the United States or North America as it is maybe in Europe or Africa or some of the other countries and continents around the world. The North American region, the ACB is represented on the North American Caribbean region as has two delegates on that. The NFB has two delegates, American Foundation for the Blind, NIB, and there are 10 American delegates, Blinded Vets Association, and half of five delegates are organizations of the blind, and five delegates are organizations for the blind. And then Canada has delegates, and the Caribbean region has delegates. We really come together as an organization in North America to try to share experiences, share information, share best practices. Our goals really revolve around sharing best practices within the region, and then what can we do to help each other. And there's a push right now on what we can do in a way that's meaningful to provide best practices, ideas, technology, education, to the Caribbean. And so various members of the North American and Caribbean region kind of pull together in teams of two or three or four organizations and work together to either share ideas or even put programs together for the Caribbean. My particular interest in the World Blind Union is as chairman of the Global Employment Committee, because I think that the employment issue, number one, it's my primary mission, and I think it's the most important issue for the community that exists. Here in this country, 7 out of 10 blind Americans are not working today, and we're probably one of the more successful countries. So what my charge is to really pull together a variety of toolkits, as well as establishing World Blind Union policies on employment. The real practical and meaningful work is really developing a variety of toolkits of best practices and programs in the areas of employment and employment-enabling technology so that those programs and strategies can be shared around the globe. And it's a new, it's a committee that's been around for a while, but we're right now starting to kind of get our stride and pull together a lot of information that I think over the course of the next several years will be very meaningful for the world, and also be an opportunity for some of the innovative and leading edge programs that exist right here in the United States to serve as role models for other countries. It's interesting when the earlier caller was talking about sheltered workshops and a bit of an animosity towards them. You know, we have countries, very developed countries, coming to us now wanting to know what we're doing here in the United States at National Industries for the Blind because they are starved and they are desiring innovative and great employment opportunities for people who are blind. And I hope the work that we're doing at National Industries for the Blind will break through all of the old erroneous stereotypes that existed and can serve as a role model for other countries to kind of copy some of the things that we're doing.
A statement you made just a moment back was that some 7 out of 10 blind Americans are without employment. Why do you think that is?
I think it's due to three primary areas. I think that there is clearly a level of of discrimination by way of ignorance in terms of the hiring population's belief or understanding in the capabilities of people who are blind. I think that is one of the driving forces that we need to overcome through both awareness, but also through demonstrative examples, which I think when you look across our network of associated agencies where we have blind people at all levels of the organization, whether that's in product management, marketing, finance, operations, assembly work, packaging work, machine operators, you know, they're in Seattle, people who are blind and people who are deafblind make thousands of parts for Boeing aircraft. Any kind of plane or Boeing airplane, thousands of parts on that plane were manufactured by people who are blind and people who are deafblind. So I think, you know, we've got to overcome that through awareness, but also through demonstrated success. I think the second area is the, I think the rehabilitation system can always improve, but I think what has been my observations is that, and that people who are blind, it's very flip or not sophisticated about what I'm going to say, but I think I'm directionally accurate. If you're real smart, you know, go be a lawyer. If you're real technical, go be a computer scientist. if you're, you know, a lot of people who are blind work within the blindness field. The jobs in America are in the business field. That's where we've missed the boat as a blindness community.
Mm-hmm.
And the jobs are sales jobs, marketing jobs, whether it's customer service at one level or, you know, sales management, sophisticated selling at another level, marketing, operations, manufacturing, service management. The business arena is where the work is in this country, and that's where I think the rehabilitation. I've seen a lot of movement just in my short tenure in the blindness field towards more interest and emphasis in the business opportunities, but I think that's where we've missed the mark over maybe the last, you know, 20 or 30 years in terms of developing people with the right skill sets to go be successful. And then I think the third area has to do with we blind people ourselves and maybe our families or school environments. If people start off with low expectations of themselves or the people, a person who's blind, parents or teachers or family members have low expectations, then I think it's going to be a tough time for that individual to kind of beat that over the long haul of life. You know, I always like to say that, you know, and I have small children, they're 13, 11, and 9 now, but I don't expect that my kids are going to be race car drivers or necessarily, you know, naval aviators or rock and roll stars. But if that's what they want to be, I try not to squelch those ideas. And I think that if a young blind child's parent says, when the little boy or little girl says, I want to be an airplane pilot, and they say, you can't do that because you're blind, I think they're squelching hopes and aspirations at a very tender age. And, you know, the truth is the child probably won't be a pilot, but they might be the president of the airline someday.
That's exactly right. I think it's so important, the image that we who are blind have of ourselves, and you very graciously lead me to my next question. And that is a scenario. I'm blind. I've graduated from high school and maybe gone on, tried college, but that wasn't too successful. And maybe tried some sort of vocational training, but that didn't really work out for me. Every time I go and apply for a job, nothing ever happens. So I just give up. I just stay among the blind community, and I've given up. What would you say to me? How would you shake me and waken me and give me a little bit of that spirit that you've got?
Well, when I'm talking with young folks or folks that I might be mentoring, I really try to try to talk about, you know, what are your passions and what are your skills. And try to build your life around your passions as much as you can, but if your passions aren't going to pay the bills, make sure you're developing the skills. And so you know, a lot of folks might like music, but it's a pretty competitive industry. But you also might be reasonably talented in interacting with people and decent technology skills to work in a call center environment. Now, working in a call center environment may not feed your passions, but it may pay your bills, and playing music in another venue could work. And that could work maybe, you know, weekend warrior or at your church or for fun. If in fact you don't necessarily have the skills to be competitive in the music arena. I think that, you know, closing the gap on the skills development is important. I think that if you tried college and tried, and you keep dropping out, you know, I think you gotta do some self-reflection. You gotta kind of look and see what is it about you that you need to think about, to develop the skills. Because people don't hire you if you come across as a quitter. You know, winners never quit, quitters never win. And, so you've gotta always be a little bit hungry for something, for that next step, for that next skill, for that next opportunity. And employers, you know, I think it's tough enough in today's environment. An employer looks across the table and they're interviewing a blind, prospective employee, and people say, could I do my job if I couldn't see? So if you're not demonstrating that positive attitude at the interview, that can do, if you're not able to bring to the table the skills that you've developed through training or through volunteer work, I think you can develop a lot of skills through volunteer work if you're young and you maybe haven't, you know, you're kind of trying to figure out your way from an education perspective. There are a variety of ways to develop some skills, to get some opportunities that at least allow you to put a package together to talk to an employer about what you can do. And, of course, we have a network of associated agencies around the country that provide a lot of rehabilitation and training and other services to people who are blind in their communities, and they have employment opportunities that might work, and they have a wide range. So they have a lot of entry-level opportunities that could work for the person that you're talking about. But even with that, you know, you still got to come to work with a good work ethic, and you know, our network of associated agencies will have an expectation that you know you're part of the team, and you'll deliver and you'll perform. And then they'll also put the supports around you to help you be successful.
Talk to me a little bit about, what does Jim Gibbons do in his spare time? You can't always be working. What are some of the things that you, just Jim, on a Saturday, enjoy doing?
Well, I rooted for the Colts, and they lost. But I did root for the Packers.
Oh, boo!
Probably my favorite thing to do these days, one of my favorite kind of just fun things, is fantasy football. With started with my oldest son, now my daughter's into it, and kind of have a family affair going, where we kind of all, I have a team, or my son and I have a team, but it's really everybody's team. So that's kind of our fun weekend thing. And I mentioned that, you know, we have three children, and that pretty much takes my time. They're all very involved in scouts and sports and school, and you know, they're what it's all about.
Yeah, I've not had children in my life, and I often wonder how parents survive. So I extend my congratulations to you, even to make the time to be with us tonight. It's about 46 minutes past the hour, and Jim will be with us till just about the top of the hour. And in the second hour, we will move into open forum. And the telephone number to call is 866 666 7926. I want to go back a little bit to the questions about the employment arena. What basic skills as a blind person, just in general? I know certainly it depends upon the job for which one is applying, but just generally speaking, what basic skills should I be bringing to the table as a person who is blind?
Well, I think in today's job market, you need to be coming to the skills with coming to the table with your basic Microsoft Office kind of environment skills. You've got to have, if you're blind, you've got to know the access technology to make yourself productive with those tools. I think that you you have to have strong independent living skills, whether that's mobility in getting to and from work, or how you conduct yourself at work. I think on a personal level, the can-do attitude is critical. I think if you let your blindness put a chip on your shoulder, at a kind of a personality or how you conduct yourself in a professional environment, your career will not advance. So I think there's a certain level of basic technical skills, and there's a certain level of behavioral and personal skills. And what I've been asked to talk a lot about with young people, not quite in the job market but approaching the job market, is some of the basics. And how do you conduct yourself? How do you whether that's manners and whether that's dress or how you, so in some way, sometimes how you eat. A lot of times I think people don't know how to tell us the truth and let us get away with a little bit. And, you know, we need to be tough on ourselves, or not even tough. We need to be honest with ourselves, and we need to make sure that our coaches and our mentors and our friends and our parents and our teachers are saying, you know, tuck that shirt in.
Yeah.
Or, don't wear that thing. Don't wear that or, you know, your hair, you need a haircut, you know, those kind of things, because,
yeah,
you know, it's a very competitive world out there, and we have, as people who are blind, we have a level of swimming upstream that we deal with anyway, and we don't need to create more challenges for ourselves.
When I have worked one-on-one with people who are blind, and I have been able to discern by hearing their voice that their head is down. I started to do that, and then I'd be off mic here. But that their head is down. They're not looking at me. I am very, very often I will say, this is really making me uncomfortable that you're not looking at me. And I try to take the approach of this will help me, you know, rather than what I really want to say is, don't do that, you know, or stop rocking, you know. And I try to say, this makes me uncomfortable. And be that honest, because I really do think, and actually Roger, who called earlier, said this once on my program, I really do think that blind people often forget that sighted people can see them.
I've heard that.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely, absolutely. What do you think about Braille? How important is the use of Braille?
Well, I think that Braille is important, and I am not a strong Braille reader. In the way I lost my vision and how things came about, and you know, for whatever reasons, I didn't really start learning it till I was a young adult. And to this day, I do not read books in Braille. But I think that it's a very valuable tool. I think it will advantage any person who is blind at a young age. And if my children were legally blind with a deteriorating eye condition, I would make sure that they learned Braille.
Let me brag a little bit here and say that here in Seattle, I am a part of, when I'm not out of town, a group that has started at the Seattle Library, Talking Book Library for the Blind, where we are teaching Braille. And the students range from, I think the oldest student is 82, and the youngest student...
Oh, really?
Yeah, and the youngest student is 25, so show up in Seattle and we'll help you out.
Teach me a little more Braille.
Teach you a little more Braille. 866-666-7926. Let me give you some time here before I let you escape from my clutches to kind of highlight or revisit anything you might like to about NIB, the fellowship program, etc.
Well, I think I mentioned that NIB is the largest, NIB through our network of associated agencies is the largest employer of people who are blind around the country. What I didn't mention yet is that we do this through an act of Congress called the Javits-Wagner O'Day Act, and a program that is enabled through that act called the Ability One Program, and that's a new name. It was called the Javits-Wagner O'Day Program, but we're really trying to build a new brand under the Ability One name or the Ability One brand. And that's a brand that is tied to both NIB and our associated agencies and the products and services that and the program that we provide to the federal government, as well as organizations with serving people with other severe disabilities. But the Ability One program that's enabled by the Act, the Javits-Wagner-Odoi Act, is really, I think, the greatest socioeconomic results-oriented program that does exist, in this country. There's a lot of great small business programs that employ, that for self-employment for small business owners. But this program ensures that we're building a workforce across the country with scalable projects so that we can really have an impact on employment. And the Javits-Wagner-Odoi Act, which was enacted in 1938 as the Wagner-Odoi Act and then changed in 1970, is currently really starting to get some momentum on whether or not that act should be modernized. And I, for one, and NIB really believe that it should be modernized. And we've developed proposals for Congress that would really ensure greater accountability and advocacy for the program, greater upward mobility, and ensure employment growth if some of our legislative ideas are adopted. So I'm very excited about where the program is today, but I see only a positive future for the Ability One program and its effect on the lives of people who are blind over the first half of the 21st century.
I want to ask you one last question that's a bit out of sequence, but every time I thought I'd ask you, then I thought of something else and it kept going out of my mind. So I can't let you go without asking you this. For a very brief time, I was employed at the Seattle Lighthouse back in, 97, 98, I can't remember. And what I did there was to help evaluate accessibility of the technology, whether it was accessibility of the technology that was being used through computers or down on the floor. In fact, I put together, I'm not meaning to brag, I really am leading up to a question here, but I put together the team of folks and helped manage that team of folks who, in fact, we finally got the Bridgeport CNC milling machine to be accessible, which meant that the blind machinists could move up and make more money, which everybody liked.
Right.
But what I remember back then, and forgive me for having a vague recollection of this, but, age and years takes its toll. But what I remember back then is there was a hue and cry from the rehab community because there was, and help me here if I get this wrong, but there was legislation that would say placement at what was then called a sheltered workshop would not count for rehab counselors as a full placement. What happened with that? What's going on with that?
Well, what's happened with that? I mean, the nutshell version of what happened was at the very end of the Clinton administration under the leadership of Fred Schroeder, who was the commissioner of RSA, they slid in some regulatory changes at midnight on the last day of the administration and I looked at all of the input from people who are blind around the country, and there was no support for this in a significant way. And in fact, the data that they utilized had no NIB associated agencies in the data. But it was a movement, that would, characterize our agencies as non-integrated settings and therefore would not qualify as a competitive placement or as a placement by the vocational rehabilitation system. And what Fred said was that the vocational rehabilitation counselors I don't know if Fred said this, I think I heard him say this, but, you know, they don't want them to be lazy and take the easy way out and place people into our agencies. By the way, the agencies that, when you do an employee opinion survey, score better than Commercial America,
right.
Pay better, pay benefits,
right.
And people like to work there.
Yeah.
So what happened was that regulation got passed and really had a negative impact on our field in terms of working with the state vocation rehabilitation organizations, and really raised the cost structure for identifying a workforce. It was really, I think, an unnecessary move that served no value for people who are blind, in my ever humble opinion.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I'm right on this one.
I agree.
but the under the Secretary Hager, they re-looked at that, and what they've done, they put a circular out that did not revoke the regulation, but they really put more power into the hands of the states to make the call. And so across many states, those relationships have been rekindled, and there's been some advancement, but it is still a regulatory element that's out there that needs to be fixed, and you know, we have it on our legislative agenda to fix it legislatively because we think it makes no sense. Blind people want to be economically integrated into the communities where they can serve as members of their church, the president of their church, members of their community. They live where they want to live. They get to work how they want to get to work. And they want to have more choices of places to work, not less.
Yeah, yeah. Hey, we have one more call. Can you hang around and take this call? All right,
sure.
Great. Hi there. You're with Jim and Marlena. Who's this? Hello?
Hello?
Go ahead.
This is Sharon Hamm. I don't know if I've missed anything because I just saw the email and got on the end of the program, I guess. And I'm sorry about your Seattle team yesterday there, Marlena.
Yeah, me too, Sharon.
I'm a Cheesehead fan, so I'm happy about it. But anyway, I wanted to ask, I don't know, I didn't understand some of what was just said. Because I was trying to get in on the call and get my computer turned down. But I wanted to know, do shops still have the right when they get, like, I guess, subcontracts and bring people in as temps, do they still have the right to pay them piece rate?
Yeah, piece rate, the real question is really more about less than the minimum wage probably because you can pay piece rate and make a lot of money. But the Fair Labor Standards Act still allows not industries for the blind or for other disabilities, any corporation, if they follow certain guidelines and rules to pay a person whose disability doesn't allow them to perform the job at 100%. Less than the prevailing wage, which could be less than the minimum wage. NIB has a adopted shortly after I joined NIB a policy that blindness should not be a factor for somebody to earn less than the minimum wage. And though we've not changed that legislatively, we have supported some legislation to change that. It hasn't moved. Through our own operations, I think for 3 or 4 years in a row now, our agencies have reported that no individuals whose only disability is blindness making less than the minimum wage in our work. In fact, our agencies have taken a position that on projects through the Ability One program, people shouldn't make less than the minimum wage. So it's still a little bit of an issue out there. We fixed it pretty much operationally versus legislatively, but the Section 14C in the Fair Labor Standards Act still exists as it has for many years. I don't know how long it's been out there.
But they can still pay them even if it's less than minimum wage, like way less. Like I'm not a fast worker by all means. I'm better on the computer than I am at assembly, but
Absolutely. And I would probably have the same problem myself. My small motor skills are not that great. But our agencies have really made a commitment not to let blindness be a factor and to ensure that their workforce and that blindness is not a factor in terms of somebody making less than the minimum wage.
So I think what you're saying, Jim, just so that I'm clear, is that, yes, legally, blind people can be paid piece rate, which may translate to less than the minimum wage, but NIB has encouraged and seen in its associated agencies or shops, as Sharon referred to them, around the country, that if blindness is the only disability that people are being paid the minimum wage?
Yes, and through the leadership of NIB and our network and the National Association for the Employment of People Who Are Blind, you know, we've been very successful, and I think it has been for 4 years in a row we've not had one agency report somebody who is blind making less than the minimum wage. So, and I think that's a good path towards changing policy or legislation by, you know, proving it in the field. So we'll see what happens with that over time. But I really believe that it really is. If we are the world's greatest enablers of employment for people who are blind, which I believe that we are, then I don't think we should be paying people who are blind less than minimum wage. So, and that's been my kind of modus operandi.
What they're doing is they're calling us in as temps, and I wasn't told when I was called in as a temp that it was going to be piece rate. I was told that it was probably an hourly rate because it was the machine, and then found out 2 days later when they found out I was making a dollar something an hour that it wasn't worth calling me in for, and I didn't think they could do that anymore, you know, and that's what...
So there could be, and I don't know the specifics, but... You know, what also happens with all of this, and this is a concern of mine too, is, you know, what's happened with all of the policy changes and the policy directions is, you know, performance matters at the workplace too. So there's a challenge, and there's always going to be some tensions, and, you know, I think the best thing we can do is make sure that all we understand, put everything on the table so we understand them and make sure that the policies enable the most employment that we can across this country.
And, you know, I want to throw something in here, too. And, Sharon, you made a really interesting statement at the beginning of this discussion. You said, I'm better on the computer than I am with my hands. And I would suggest that... that maybe that's the direction you want to go and perhaps seek out some additional training. I don't even know if you need it, but you know, sell that skill. If you think that you're better, don't let someone else define what you ought to do. If piece rate ain't your bag and the computer is your bag, then that's the direction you should go and throw that challenge to them and say, hey, wait a minute, I've got this skill. Mm-hmm. And you're thinking about me in this one little box, and I can get out of that box. Let me show you.
Yeah. And I'm currently looking for another job, but I'm kind of doing this, you know, I was doing this as temporary work.
Sure.
Till I found something else, but so.
Yeah. Well, very good question, and I'm
good luck, Sharon.
And I'm glad you called.
Well, thank you. I always enjoy listening to your show.
Oh, well, I think this is the first time you've called, so it's lovely.
It is.
It's lovely to talk with you.
Nice to talk with you, and thank you very much for putting the time in to do this show every week.
Oh, well, thank you for listening, and you have a great day.
You too.
Okay.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Well, Jim, I ought to let you escape out of here, oughtn't I?
Well, I really do appreciate the opportunity to chat, and I really enjoyed it. Thank you very much, Marlena.
Well, thank you so much, and I hope that you'll come back and visit us again maybe next year and kind of give us an update on where NIB is and what's going on. And
absolutely.
Maybe we'll, you know, I get Ronnie Millsap on every Easter, so maybe I'll get Jim Gibbons on every third Sunday in January or whatever the heck this is. Who knows? Hey, Jim, thanks so much.
My pleasure.
And I look forward to seeing you in person soon.
All right.
Have a good day.
Take care.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye. All right. That was Jim Gibbons with the National Industries for the Blind. And this is Marlena, and we'll be right back. Program is brought to you by HumanWare. Visit them on the web at www.humanware.com or call them at 1-800-722-3393. HumanWare, empowering people through Braille literacy. Hi, this is Marlena. Have you been listening to ACB Radio for a while and wonder how you can help? Well, there's a Donate to ACB Radio link now available from the main page at www.acbradio.org. And thank you so much for listening to ACB Radio, where your listening is our business. You're listening to Marlena at the mainstream of acbradio.org and WTNDLP Macomb 106.3 FM. All right, a little bit late with those spots is better than not doing them at all. I apologize to my buddies there in Macomb who really needed that spot at the top of the hour, but I thought that the questions that Jim and Sharon were discussing were, it was a good conversation, and I just made the executive decision that all those spots could wait. All right, we're in open forum. 866-666-7926. Call me up. What's on your mind? What's going on? What's been happening other than football? Oh, my gosh. Oh, my poor Seahawks. I have to, now, this isn't a sports show. I get that. So don't anybody call me up and yell at me and tell me to be quiet and talk about something else. But, you know, yesterday, the first 20 seconds of the game, we led 14-0. Yes, Ray Campbell, I was jumping up and down, thinking of the Starbucks that you would be buying me. Now I guess I owe you some cheese. But that's okay. I am now going to root for Green Bay. because I cannot root for New York. 866-666-7926. I want to remind folks that the ACB Legislative Seminar is rapidly approaching. And if you want to make your room reservation, you need to call the Washington Plaza Hotel. I think so. And I tell you, age and years. And make your reservation by tomorrow and tell them that you are with the American Council of the Blind. If you haven't been to an ACB legislative seminar, it is truly, truly, truly an experience. It's a wonderful experience. And then you need to go online to acb.org and fill out the registration form or call Patricia in the ACB National Office at 800-424-8666 to make your reservation for attendance at the legislative seminar, which begins on February 11th, I think. I'm going there several days before that, so that's why I'm a little bit unsure of the exact date of which thing. The ACB Board of Directors, of course, will be meeting on the Friday of that week before, which is the 8th. And then the 9th and the 10th, I believe, are the ACB President's meetings. And the 11th and 12th, I think the way it's set up is the ACB Legislative Seminar. So as much of all of that as you can participate in, you will come out much the richer for it. One of the things that happens at legislative seminar is that prior to seminar, ACB works to determine its legislative agenda. Now, one of the things that's extremely important right now that will be presented at the legislative seminar is the transition of how we watch TV. Next February, February 17th, 2009, the United States will change to digital TV, and if you receive TV right now without cable or satellite, you know, you just have an antenna up, your TV won't work. And there is a program that has been, you've probably seen commercials for it, where, of course, they don't voice the 800 number to call, but there is a program that has been instituted by the federal government wherein folks can apply for a coupon which serves as a stipend toward the cost of the converter box that you will need to put on your television. So one of the issues about that is how accessible will this box be? And right now, because video description is permitted but not mandated, these boxes are not being tested to determine whether or not programs, television programs, which are video described, will be able to be passed through, is the sort of industry phrase. So some of us are working pretty hard on that issue, and I know Eric Bridges, the Director of Advocacy and Governmental Relations at ACB, has spent countless hours in meetings with folks in Washington. I have been on the telephone with Eric in meetings with folks in Washington who make the decisions about how those boxes will be tested, and it's still quite an issue. So I know that will be on our legislative agenda, and plus the interesting situation, and I apologize for not remembering the name of the House committee. When I lived in Washington, I used to always remember the name of the House committee, and kind of the further away I get and the older I get, I kind of forget these things, but we were working, ACB and many of its affiliates belong to a coalition called COAT, the Coalition of Organizations for Accessible Technologies. And COAT has been working sort of behind the scenes with various congresspeople to introduce some legislation that a part of which would restore the mandate for video description. And quite by surprise, one of the House committees in mid-December released this, you can't call it a bill because it hasn't been introduced, but released this initiative. Now, what this does is two things. One, it gives us a chance to tell you guys that, hey, when you hear about contact your legislator in D.C., we really mean it, because this might restore video description as a mandate and not as a permitted option. And two, on the downside, it gives those who would oppose this industry, and some, I shouldn't say all industry, that's not fair, but some members of industry, and perhaps some within the blindness community itself, the opportunity to figure out strategies to keep legislators from signing on and getting this introduced as a bill. So it's kind of an interesting time in which we live. The digital age is definitely, you know, in some ways it helps us. In other ways, it's like, wow, here we go, something else that's not accessible. 866-666-7926. We are in open forum, and I do hope that you will give me a call. Also want to apologize to folks for the number of messages that were sent out to the various lists today regarding this program. Every once in a while, and I have no idea why, but every once in a while, my computer will simply kick out copy after copy after copy after copy. And once I see that that's happening, I stop and reboot, and the problem stops. But I really didn't do it on purpose, and I really didn't mean to annoy, frustrate, and otherwise tick people off. We have a caller. Let's bring him in. Hi, you're with Marlena. Who's this?
Hi, it's Debbie Hazelton.
Hi, Debbie Hazelton.
Hey.
How are you?
I am really fine. How are you?
Well, I'm really fine, too.
Yes, I believe that. Well, I wanted to say, I think it's next week that I'm filling in for you, right?
Yes!
Well, I have licensed nutritionist Janet Cimarelli, who's going to come on the show, and we're going to talk about healthy habits in the new year for eating and supplements, things to know about for health. And I think the weekend after that I'm filling in, her daughter is also a cook.
Oh, man.
She's coming on, and at least I think she is. That's the plan. And she has aspirations of following in the footsteps of Rachel Ray, who started out on radio. So I think she's looking forward to having a an opportune stint with ACB Radio.
Oh, that would be very cool. That'd
yeah.
be very cool. You know, I tell you, she and Dale Campbell, man, they ought to get together. And holy moly!
I know it. Yeah, I'm hoping Dale will call in, and I think I will email him and just, you know, really encourage
yeah.
that. That would be a great kind of duo.
Yeah, yeah.
And also on my new show this Friday, I am planning on doing a taping tomorrow with Marilyn Volker, Dr. Marilyn Volker, who's a sexologist. And I think we're going to have a really great conversation about relationships, and then there'll be opportunity in the second hour for people to call in. So I just wanted to kind of put that out there.
Well, I'm delighted that you did put that out there. And, and by the way, your name came up today. I was on, actually went on MSN to look for you, but you weren't there. But my friend Paul in the UK, you know, who's been a guest on the show here, was there. And I said, hey, how are you? And I'm fine. And then he said, how's your friend Debbie? I really enjoyed talking with her.
Aww.
So, yeah. So
that
see?
Is very sweet.
See? Yeah, yeah.
Well, maybe he would like to come on again when I'm filling in.
Yeah, well, you know what? I'll give you his email.
Okay.
Because
cool.
you're going to, I have to give you, you might not like me anymore, but I have to give you the list of weeks because it's several.
It's growing. I know I'm away in February.
Well, that's okay. I mean, you know what?
If
we have to do a repeat, we have
yep.
to do a repeat.
Yeah.
It's and that's one thing I want to say is that I really appreciate our ACB Radio listeners because they really do understand that, you know what, we're all volunteers.
Mm-hmm.
We don't get paid a penny. And,
yep.
Sometimes life kind of gets in the way and you can't be here. So
right, I know.
So
it's such a great bunch of listeners.
Yeah.
I tell you what.
I tell you.
I just send out hugs and love to all the listeners because they're just we've got a lot of very kind people and very supportive, enthusiastic, and I think, I thought Larry was handing me. We're going through sorting out things on top of the refrigerator. A new refrigerator is coming tomorrow, and I've been begging him to maybe think about all the things that are on top of the old refrigerator anyway, so now he has to. And then I've been looking for one of my coolers that I haven't seen since I moved in, and so we've been kind of searching around for that and hoping, you know, to find that so that we can put things from the old refrigerator into the coolers while we're waiting for the new one to be set in place.
Oh, isn't that fun?
Oh, isn't that fun?
Yeah.
And I'm not even getting to do my interactive show tomorrow because my main computer is, like, practically dead. I mean, it's really in bad shape.
Oh, no, but
even.
But you live with Larry the Board Guy, so.
Well, and what that means is Larry the Board Guy has helped me spend my money, a humongous amount of money, to buy the parts for a new machine that he will build. But if it wasn't for him building it, that machine would have been unaffordable to buy at retail, I'm sure.
Yeah, oh, I'm sure. Well, yeah. Now, is the refrigerator his idea or
yes.
your idea?
It's his idea to get the refrigerator, but I think I kind of helped to spawn it maybe slightly because I came in with all sorts of food already.
Well, see, but my point is, he helped you spend boodles of money, and you said, okay, gotcha, go buy a new refrigerator.
But he went to a place and found one for, like, half the price of
wow.
what he almost spent elsewhere, and it's really, really going to be nice. A lot more room, and I don't know, it has French doors on the front of it, and I'm thinking he might be saying, you put your stuff on this side, and I'll put mine on this side.
French doors? You mean like two doors?
Two doors for a refrigerator, and then the freezer is this big drawer on
yeah,
the bottom.
Yeah, that's what we have. We have a big drawer on the bottom, but we only have one drawer on the
oh,
front.
Oh, yeah, this is the new thing. I did not know. And
oh,
then
my gosh.
The water dispenser is inside, not outside.
Yeah,
but that's okay.
Yeah, our water dispenser is inside. time.
I'm just thrilled that we'll have one. Oh, wow, you know?
Well, it's a good thing we are not in the market for a refrigerator, because I can hear Gary the Bort guy say, yeah, let's get one of those, and you can keep all that healthy stuff you eat on that one side. And
right, well, I know. He may say that to me. You keep all that healthy, yucky
keep
stuff
all
over
that
there.
Yucky stuff. You know, I use most of my makeup and facial products. Well, not so much my makeup, but my facial products are hand-blended by the person that I go to, and they have a lot of herbs and good stuff in them. And one of the things that she makes is a chocolate mask.
Ooh.
But you have to keep it in the refrigerator. And Gary, when I first went there, he said, what is this?
He didn't take a spoon to it?
Well, it sort of looks like mud, you know?
Oh.
And, and you open it up, though, and it smells like chocolate mint, you know, and it makes you want to eat it. But it's kind of got a mud base, so
oh god,
not the best to do.
One of those where you're glad you forgot your spoon.
Yeah, you're glad you forgot your spoon. So let me ask you, how did you feel last Friday night when you started your first
Very
live
nervous.
Talk show?
Very nervous. Just because it was there's so much I want to do for it that I haven't been able to really do in the way of little promos and announcements and things. I mean, I did a promo and I did an announcing thing, but there are things I want to have in the show and, you know, certain music things. And we're using his machine to do that show. And so he had to get off, he had to have Interactive up and launch Mainstream at the same time and then gradually let Interactive go. It was really interesting.
Wow.
You know, and I had two sets of headphones and a microphone, and you know, it was just, and I was nervous because I knew that I was just grabbing at every straw to keep it going without, and there were a few calls, which was great, but you know, it's just, and I'm, you know, like any new relationship, I'm feeling my way with it to have it, you know, I mean, it's just a new, you know, a new thing to feel out how it's going to go, or not how it's going to go. I think it's going to go great, but exactly in the direction, you know. So,
yeah. Well, I've got some leads that I'm going to email you.
Excellent.
For when you fill in for me, that you don't have to scramble on both ends of the spectrum. One of them, and I was sort of like, oh, I want to do this one, but that's not fair. I mean, you're helping me, so.
Yeah.
But through reading the list and then the ACBL and then sort of doing some web research, I have found from New Zealand a blind acupuncturist.
Ooh, really?
Now,
wow.
So we have to talk about your phone logistics, whether or not that can work for you. Whether
to
it costs
New Zealand?
Yeah,
well, I mean, probably if they were on Skype.
Yeah, well,
that might work.
So that's one, and so
wow.
I've got a couple.
Okay.
And you know, that's the hardest thing for me right now about doing my show is keeping it fresh and finding interesting people.
I know. Yeah, I know, and I can foresee. You know, I mean, I wished I was trying to get Marilyn on for the first one, and that just didn't happen. But, you know, obviously I can't have her on all the time. And I think once I'm meeting people in this new program, I'm going to find more very interesting people. And, you know, I mean, but I think having someone on is really important. It's helpful, you know, because I don't want it to all be me, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, I can really appreciate that. And you know, I don't know. I mean, I think people love it even when you do open phone, because people love to chat and talk to you and all that.
Well, it makes me nervous when you know, we do the open phone, because I think, oh, my God, if no one calls,
I know.
What will I talk about for an hour, you know?
Well, that's how I felt the other night.
You know,
Yeah, that's how I felt. I just kept talking, you know, and I was like, oh, I said, poor Larry. I said, I think you've heard enough of me.
Yeah, sometimes I think they're sitting there thinking, well, that woman ever shut up. So if that's what you're thinking, then you need to call me, right?
Yeah, exactly. But, you know, I really also think that, you know, if there's a show that we both really want to do, I mean, we can do it together. That doesn't have to be something that I do when you're not around. It can be something that we do together.
Sure, absolutely. You know? Absolutely. We'll be the mainstream live talk radio divas.
The Bobsy Twins.
The Bobsy Twins of ACB Radio Mainstream live talk shows. Yeah. Well, look, the guys are doing it on Main Menu. I mean,
They are. And I want you on mine as much as you want to be. I really would love it, you know?
Well, and I thought that I would be listening to yours, and then something came up, and I was like, oh, darn, I'm not going to get home on time.
You know, and I mean, you know, what are firsts like? Sometimes firsts are just not, you know, they're not all that we want them to be, but they still are. And I thought of you today because I had said something on the air the other night about whoever said the quote that 95% of what we need to do is just show up in the present. And this woman sang a song today in church, and I said, I want that, and I don't know how I'm going to get it, but the song was, I just showed up for my life to see what I was missing.
Oh my gosh.
Just, and I went to this church today. I knew you would love it because it was all non-sexist language, all inclusive, none of that stuff that we don't like.
Yeah.
And it was just, and they were thriving. I mean, they were like over 100 people for their first service and well over 250 people for their second service.
Oh, my gosh.
I was like, wow, this is cool.
Oh, my gosh. Do they do anything online? Do you know?
They actually do. They have their podcasts that are downloadable. I think it's Orlando Unity Church or Unity Church of Orlando.org, something like that. I'm sure we can Google it, but but what I'm hoping that their music is there, because they said, oh, we start with joy songs. And I thought, oh, I don't like most Unity joy songs. They remind me of kindergarten. Well, these were written by their director of music, and they were relevant words like all thoughts are prayers, you know, I mean, just gorgeous stuff. And he taught them to the people. They were simple enough that just had each, like, maybe three lines or something, and they just sang it a few times, and by then everybody learned it. And then they went on to the next one, and they had the words up on a screen for people to see. And it was just, I started to cry. I was so moved.
Oh, my gosh. I'm coming to Orlando to visit
you. Yeah, there you go.
And we'll go.
Yeah. Well, you know, at Orlando ACB next year, I think. Is it next year?
'09, yeah.
Yeah, we'll have '09. To sneak out.
We'll say, excuse me, we're leaving to go to church.
Yeah.
And people go, what?
Yeah, after we raise Cain.
After we raise Cain all week long. Excuse me, we're not going to church. Bye-bye. Well, that sounds really exciting. I'm going to check that out and try to get that icon on my podcast.
Podcast
on my icon.
The guy is a little long-winded, but I felt that what he says is very relevant.
Yeah.
I mean, he just described so much of the process that I just went through in waiting to move and then knowing when it was time and doing it. And he described so much of it. And it, you know, he was very real. Just long-winded, they said that they've had some people requesting that he ends on time, and he doesn't. And, you know, but you know, it's a good problem to have, really, because, I mean, that place was full and nice. I mean, just a lovely building. They had other houses next door on other sides of them that they had bought a few of them and made them into other buildings and attached them to what they've got there. And, you know, took a cottage and turned it into a nice place for their youth, and they put in a big playground, and then they want to buy some other little houses that are around there and expand their parking because they don't have enough parking. Oh, man.
Wow, that's pretty amazing.
Oh, well, I was just so excited.
That is pretty amazing.
Yeah.
Well, thanks for telling me about that. I'm going to check it out.
All right. Well, I'm just sending my love and hugs and wonderful thoughts to all the listeners, and I'm going to hang up so that other people can call you because I'm sure they're eager to say hi to you as well.
Well, thank you, and I appreciate that. And I will talk to you this week because I want to, and and I also need to make sure that you have my dates, and I know when
yes.
you're not going to be here, and
okay.
Who knows, maybe it'll all work out.
Yeah, it just might. And also, please say hi to Gary, the board guy.
And, I shall.
And Larry, the board guy, says hi to you and Gary, the board guy.
Well, you tell Larry, the board guy, that Gary, the board guy, and Marlena say hi to him.
Okay, you got it.
All right, you take care, Deb.
You too.
Okay.
Bye.
Bye-bye. 866-667-926. That's my dear, dear friend, Debbie Hazelton. And if you haven't caught her relationship connection on Mainstream yet, please do so on Friday nights in North America. Hi, this is Marlena. Who's this?
Hey, what's up, Marlena? It's Jesse.
Hey, Jesse. How are you?
Pretty good. How was your Christmas and your New Year's and stuff like that?
Well, thank you for asking. My Christmas was good, but I had some surgery in early December that was supposed to be really simple, but turned into not being as simple as it should have been. But that's okay. So my Christmas was kind of, you know, I don't remember a lot of it, actually, but by the time New Year's came, I was well enough to go out to dinner, and so we went out to dinner with our neighbors, because New Year's Eve is Gary's and my anniversary.
Oh, so, happy anniversary,
yeah.
Now that I know that, then.
Yeah, well, you know, I just wanted to get married on a day when the whole world would celebrate my anniversary, so there you go. So how was your Christmas and New Year's?
Good. Mine was really good. I actually, for Christmas, I got me a pretty neat gadget. I actually got me a Sony PSP Slim.
Now, what the heck is that?
Okay, let me explain to you.
Okay.
How am I going to explain this? The only thing I can compare it to, and I'm going to go a little bit into the sighted world for this.
All right.
There is a device that a lot of kids mostly use it called the Nintendo DS system, which is basically something about, it's an actual portable gaming device.
Right.
Which uses two screens, one on the top that will flip up, like a laptop type thing.
Right.
And there's another screen on the bottom, but the beauty of that the screen on the bottom is a touch screen. And you play the games. Some of them use it, some of them don't. Like, there might be games, like if you're playing like a role-playing game.
Right.
Where on the top of the screen, on the top screen would be your action, like your characters walking and your combat and stuff like that.
Right.
And then your bottom screen could be for anything such as your inventory item menus to a map of the world that you're in. So basically you have two screens to get data off of.
Gotcha.
And Sony said, oh, Nintendo's coming out with something like that. We're going to come out with something that's going to top it. So they came out with something called the PSP. It's been out ever since 2005. But the new iteration of it uses how can I describe these? They're called UMDs, which stands for Universal Media Disc.
Right.
And the only way that I could describe this is take a DVD.
Right.
Put it in a shell,
Okay.
And that's your UMD disc, and of course they're small.
Okay.
And you would stick this little thing into the machine, and you have full-blown video games that you would get on a big console system. They have everything from, they have everything from Namco collections, which include everything from Pac-Man to God knows what else.
Okay.
Early in the 80s, all the way to modern games such as the latest one that's been out now is I forgot what the name of it was now. It'll come to me. It's a futuristic war game.
Okay, but how do you play it if you can't see it?
Well, here's the deal. The type of games that I play,
yeah,
are either I love the retro collections, which are like, they have like all these games from like the early 80s and 90s and stuff.
You mean like Zork and Hitchhikers? And...
No, my friend. I'm talking about everything from, let's see, Final Fight, Double Dragon, side-scrolling action games.
Oh, okay.
Basically, well, let me not go too far because I have heard that they're trying to make graphical adaptations of interactive fiction text games, but due to their nature, they're only going to be able to be played on the DS because they're going to be using the dual screen technology.
Okay.
Where you'll be able to click around the environment
okay.
with your cursor.
Okay.
And yeah. But I got that for Christmas.
But you still haven't told me. You still haven't told me.
I play them. I play them.
How do you do it?
Oh,
by sound. So give me an example. Tell me how you. I mean, just sort of give me a 2-minute overview of this because.
Let me see how I can describe it.
Yeah,
a lot of people tell me. For instance, when you turn on this gaming system,
right.
You technically do not go straight into the game. You go into what Sony calls their cross-media bar interface.
Okay.
And when I first heard about this, another friend of mine who's blind got one of these things, and I'm like, dude, you're nuts. That interface is not going to be accessible.
Right.
He let me hold his PSP, and I went through this interface, and I'm like, okay, it's going click, 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 click. What options are on the screen? He's like, well, the way that this works is, how can I describe this? Imagine, you know how in Windows you have your toolbar at the top?
Right.
File, edit.
Right.
Imagine that as the only interface to the OS.
Okay.
And for instance, oh, by the way, the interface does not wrap around.
Okay. Well, that's
so
good.
So you have an advantage. For
yeah,
so, for
yeah.
instance, if I want to do a network update, because, yes, Marlena, as everything nowadays, this thing does require firmware.
Right.
And there are firmware updates. And, for instance, if I want to do a firmware update, there's a switch on it that I flip on, which is the Wi-Fi switch. Yes, it does come with integrated Wi-Fi.
Okay.
And I would go left, all the way to my left, and then I would go up twice to network update.
So, in other words, this is a lot of memorization.
A lot of memorization.
Okay.
A lot of... One thing that I like about this device is that once you insert a game...
Mm-hmm.
The device will automatically put the cursor on the game icon. So all that you technically have to do is just hit X,
mm-hmm.
which is your enter, your confirmation button,
mm-hmm.
and the game loads up.
And this device, I presume, has a keyboard rather than a touch screen.
Yeah, it has a what they call a D-pad, which is an up, down, left, and right.
Ah, gotcha.
And it has your home, which is how do you get it, which is how you get into your interface once you're playing a game.
Mm-hmm.
You have your volume down, volume up, brightness control. Then you have your start and select, your X, square, triangle, and circle.
Hmm.
And then on the top left and the top right, you have what are called your L and R buttons. And some games use all of them. Some games use a portion of them. As a matter of fact, you're going to be delighted to know that Skype, the program that you all love, is coming over to the PSP, I think, in a couple months.
Wow,
yes,
that's pretty cool.
You get a headset that they sell for it.
Wow.
It does have USB capabilities. And, Marlena, the only thing that I could really tell you is if you're ever at, let's say, at a mall, and you have a chance to go into a store called either EB Games or GameStop.
Yeah.
Tell them to show you one if they have one on display.
Okay.
Because really, and Gary could probably, because I've described it to you, but maybe he can describe to you maybe what color the buttons are. Because they, to a blind person, those buttons I just described to you, the circle, the square, the triangle, and the circle, and the X, they're all circular buttons. Except I know their layout because I have actually played with its bigger brother, which I'm sure that you've heard about on the news a lot, the PS3.
Sure, yeah.
Which,
yeah.
There's a unique aspect to that. If you're lucky enough to own a PS3 and a PSP, Marlena,
yeah,
they'll network with each other. And really neat things happen. For instance, have you guys heard of something now called Blu-ray?
Yes.
Okay. There's certain movies that you're going to be able to buy, and providing you have a PSP and a memory stick, you will be able, from within the movie, download to your PSP an exact copy of the movie onto the memory stick and play it anywhere that you're at.
Oh, that's really cool. That's really cool. You know, I'm going to have to run here in a minute, but I've got a suggestion. Why don't you put together a review of this for Main Menu and send it in?
I'll do that. And
I think that would
way,
be wonderful.
Marlena,
yeah.
Okay, no, I will. And by the way, just to let you know, in case if you're looking,
yeah.
Today I just got myself a 500 gigabyte my book external hard drive,
yeah,
with USB 2.0,
yeah,
FireWire 400 and FireWire 800, and also the new external SATA interface.
Good grief.
$200.
Good grief. Well, that sounds fascinating. But really, put together a review of the PST.
I will. I've been meaning to put a review of that, and also another one I'm meaning to do. I just got to get the time to do it. Is of a system that you also probably already know about called the Nintendo Wii system.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which I do have one of those, and it's very interesting because there, all the games are basically, you have to actually, literally, I'm not joking, you do have to get physical.
Yeah.
Because you have to do certain motions, point. It's really neat. That one's really neat.
Well, you
but
know
I
what?
I am going to do a review.
Yeah, do that. Do that. And, you know, I don't want to cut you off, but we're almost done, and I want to.
No.
Yeah.
No. I was just calling just to, basically see how everything had gone with you, and say hi to Gary and to your two doggies.
Oh, well, you're a sweetheart, and I appreciate your friendship and that you listen.
All right, my friend.
All right.
Check you later.
You take care, Mr. Jesse.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
866-666-7926. We may have time for one more phone call if you want to call in. And Jesse is just a fascinating guy. You know, he's just, boy, if there's a way a blind person can play that game, Jesse is going to figure that out. And I met Jesse in person, actually, when I used to work for HumanWare. And I was going all through the state of Florida with the Braille notes and doing workshops. And so that was kind of fun. It's kind of nice to meet those of you who listen to the program. And pretty soon now we'll be getting into the cycle where I will be having as my guests those folks who are putting together the national program for the ACB National Convention. We have a call. Hi, you're with Marlena. You're the last caller. Who's this?
Well, hey, Marlena. This is Kelly in Leavenworth. How are you?
I'm great, Kelly. How are you?
I am great.
What's going on with you?
Well, I had a good Christmas and spent it with my boss and her grandchildren, and because my family is all spread out throughout the KC metro area. Come here.
Yeah, I mean, Kelly, we're sort of short on time, so.
Yep. Well, so I was just calling to say hey.
Yeah.
Glad to hear that your Christmas went as well as it could.
Yeah, it was a good Christmas. Yeah, yeah. Like I said, I don't remember much of it, but you know, Gary and I didn't exchange a lot of gifts this year, but I gave him a few little things, and he gave me a nice set of earbuds from Bose, and boy, they're really nice. I keep them in my ears now instead of using a pillow speaker at night when I read, so they're pretty
earbuds
nice.
Earbuds are handy. I use them all the time. In fact, my bank just got a few months ago a talking ATM.
Oh, very cool.
And my boss was as excited for me as I was excited when she discovered it.
Very cool. Very,
and so,
very cool.
Among the list of things that she has now taught me, she has taught me how to use the ATM for myself.
Well.
Because I was almost going to do it before I moved up here, but then I ran into a certain job and had to move and didn't get to.
Well, I'm so, you know, and didn't it make you feel independent that first time?
Oh, so awesome.
Yeah.
Because the first time she took me, she showed me all the button layout and how to find, you know, how to get to the ATM. And she says, next time I'll show you the other way that I may have to park. And she did. And I mean, it was just great.
So now you can go to the ATM yourself and take out your own money or put in your own money.
Uh-huh. And she's recommending if I have money to put in that I actually go in the bank, but
yeah, yeah. Well,
which I don't blame her there.
Some people do, some people don't. I mean, I've done it both ways, but yeah, you know, talking ATMs are here because of the work that ACB has done through its attorneys, who rather than sue people, conduct structured negotiations with banks and, you know, or other entities. So rather than being lawsuit happy, we conduct structured negotiations. It's a friendly thing. And, and now look, talking ATMs are everywhere, and ACB is the reason why. So
hey, they're even in the smaller towns now, which is kind of fun to see.
That's right.
I'm now finally getting a chance to, when I can, get on the internet and find out about some of the stuff that has been done, because you know I just have finally gotten a chance to here lately, and I wound up with two prescriptions now, and so I got to really watch which pills I take out of which bottle.
Well, now, you know, AFB, the American Foundation for the Blind, is starting a campaign called Label Enable. And you might go to their website and find out, which I have not yet done, and I apologize for not having enough information on this, but I know that they are interested in hearing from blind people who have issues with prescription labels. So go to AFB.net and look up their Label Enable program and see what they're looking for. Maybe you can help them out.
Okay, I'll have to do that.
All right. Hey, listen, I got to run. We're just about, like, doing it.
Yeah, your time escaped you, didn't it?
Yeah, it sure did. Holy moly. All right, my dear, will you take care? You have a very happy new year.
And you do the same.
All right, and give that cat a hug.
I got her on my lap. She said, Mom, I want attention.
All right. Well, you take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. That's about going to do it for us for this week. And, yeah, go check out that Label Enable. I'm very low on information about that. But, you know, AFB, NIB, all of these organizations really are out there and are working with us and not against us, and really working to help make life a little bit better. Hey, I'm going to be away for a while, and in my place will be the one and only Miss Debbie Hazelton, my dear, dear, dear friend. And you heard what she's going to have next week. Don't forget to check out her new show also here at the Mainstream on Friday nights in North America and 2 to 4 UTC on Saturday morning, and that's 6 to 8 Pacific and 9 to 11 Eastern. Great show, The Relationship Connection. But I'll be away for a little bit. Got some traveling to do, got some ACB work to do, got some this and that to do, but I will be back, and when I come back, I hope you'll be here too, because I'll miss you. I'm Marlena. Again, apologies for the multiple messages that went out. It's not intentional. It's just my computer. And stay safe, and I'll see you when I get back. Have a wonderful, wonderful week. And join Debbie next week right here at the Mainstream for Marlena.